We've been talking about the continuity between the, quote, old-unquote German military and the, quote, new-unquote German military. In fact, we've been looking at a number of different types of continuity, institutional continuity between the current Bundeswehr and elements descended from the SS, such as the HIAG, Waffen-SS Veterans Organization, contacts between the Bundeswehr as an institution and far-right and neo-Nazi parties, contacts and pronouncements and actions on behalf of such elements by people within the German armed forces, also actions to discipline members of the German armed forces who have been engaged in more progressive political activities. We've also been taking a look at the efforts on the part of Klaus Naumann, the current Inspector General of the German Armed Forces, the equivalent of our Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, at transforming the Bundeswehr into an offensive force, into an army of aggression. We're going to take a look at that, more about that in the segment that's about to follow. For our information, we've been relying on a very important pamphlet called Reunited Germany, The New Danger. This was put out by the British Searchlight magazine, an anti-fascist monthly that I access frequently on this broadcast, and they put that out in association with the Antifa Infoblatt, a German anti-fascist information service. Information about how to obtain the Searchlight magazine and also the Reunited Germany, The New Danger, that information follows.
To subscribe to the Searchlight, a British anti-fascist publication, write to Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B, New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, or phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax 011-4471-284-4410. That's the Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B, New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax at 011-4471-284-4410.
That again for information on how to subscribe to the Searchlight magazine and how to obtain Reunited Germany, The New Danger. The next segment of the Reunited Germany that we're going to look at discusses the political context and also the German national security context in which not only the continuity between the old and the new German military is to be examined, but also the geopolitical context in which that army is going to be employed. We're going to take a look at something that we will be examining at greater length in future segments, namely the destabilization efforts on the part of German intelligence, specifically the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, directed at some of Germany's Eastern European neighbors. From the Reunited Germany, The New Danger, we read the following. Coupled with the burgeoning German militarism, which is concentrated on changing public opinion and preparing the armed forces psychologically, and which cannot be hidden by token gestures like the much-publicized joint Franco-German Brigade, there is also heightened activity by the Federal German Intelligence Service, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, or BND. The BND is, according to well-placed former NATO intelligence sources, busy establishing itself in the countries of the former East Bloc, especially those with big German minorities. The cover for this penetration is the network of German, quote, cultural centers, unquote, that have sprung up in Eastern Europe since the collapse of the Soviet Union. The object, an intelligence expert has told Searchlight, again quoting, is to create the conditions for destabilization that could lay the groundwork for future intervention, unquote. In light of the growing clamor being whipped up by Sudeten Germans and the fierce protests that surrounded the German-Czech Friendship Treaty of 1992, which did not invalidate the 1938 Munich agreements under which Hitler annexed Czechoslovakia, and in the light of the activities of ex-Belay organizations and German diplomats in Silesia, this assessment seems reasonably grounded. A word about German foreign policy. In a close-up segment, there is a discussion of an individual that we've dealt with in numerous broadcasts, namely current German Foreign Minister Klaus Kinkel, former head of the BND, and as is the case of people like George Bush, former director of Central Intelligence,
One never rises to that position of importance within a major intelligence service and severs one's connection. The current German foreign minister is the former head of the BND, Klaus Kinkel. We've dealt with the BND in numerous past broadcasts. It descended from the old Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit headed by Reinhard Gehlen, which then jumped to the CIA at the end of World War II. I've dealt with the BND in numerous broadcasts, the first three Radio Free America broadcasts, Radio Free America 22, Radio Free America programs 14 and 15, and also the RFA 36 about the destabilization of Eastern Europe, and the massive Radio Free America program number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. Information about how to obtain those at the end of this particular segment. As I've indicated, the BND has retained much of its character from the old Nazi days. In the close-up segment entitled, A Man of Intelligence, Foreign Minister Kinkel, we read the following. Other parts of Kinkel's murky past have emerged into the daylight thanks to author Eric Schmidt Ehenboom, E-E-E-N-B-O-O-M. Ehenboom reports in his book, Schuffler an der Nase, that the BND, with over 7,000 operatives spying worldwide, is now even bigger than the German Foreign Office. Building up this international espionage operation was Kinkel's first task as BND chief. However, and perhaps most interesting of all, Schmidt Ehenboom recounts that the real decisions in the BND were taken by the ex-Nazi old guard who had been recruited and trained by Hitler's spy master, Reinhard Gehlen. We are going to be taking a look at the continuity between German foreign policy, between that foreign policy and German covert operations, the continuity between the past of German foreign policy and German covert operations and the current, and the present, I should say. And we will be taking a look at collaboration and parallel activities between the German government, the German Foreign Office, and some of the various Nazi parties, including elements which intersect with the German government. And again, the discussion in past segments of the of our broadcasts about the reunited Germany, the new danger, have dealt with the continuity between the old German military and the new, and this is the context in which that is to be viewed. Returning to the reunited Germany, the new danger. Voices of protest against Germany's great power politics are being voiced by church organizations in particular. Since 1992, the Roman Catholic Pax Christi organization has consistently denounced the restoration of militarism and has labeled a succession of new armed forces plans as, quote, a security risk, unquote, and as, quote, a new stage in the militarization of society, unquote. Organizations like Pax Christi and the war resistors movement DFG-VK have not been convinced either by the reductions in overall size of the Bundeswehr. They have seen that a central factor in the 1991 Gulf War was not the size of an army, but its weaponry and its ability to use the new military technology. As the DFG-VK puts it, quote, the structural modification of the Bundeswehr into an offensive army is in any case well underway, unquote. Opposition to the covert remilitarization has even come from senior armed forces figures like former Admiral of the Fleet Elmar Schmaling, S-C-H-M-A-Umlaut-H-L-I-N-G, who was dismissed from the forces because of his criticism of prevailing military doctrine. Schmaling denounced the dispatch of 1,600 troops to Somalia in 1993 as, quote, illegal, unquote, because there was no law or constitutional provision to permit such an expedition. Similarly, the admiral has publicly accused Bundeswehr chief Naumann of preparing an army of aggression. In particular, he drew attention to a defense ministry document describing, quote, the pressure of immigration by impoverished masses, unquote, as a threat to Europe. We've dealt with the parallel policy that the various Nazi parties of Germany have pursued in that regard, and the corresponding behavior of the German government, which essentially has stolen the far-right and Nazi Party's thunder on the immigration issue. Now again, this former German admiral, Admiral Schmaling, is criticizing a German defense ministry document describing, quote, the pressure of immigration by impoverished masses, unquote, as a threat to Europe. Continuing with reunited Germany's analysis, Schmaling, who is quite familiar with the attitudes of the Bundeswehr's upper echelon and knows what is to be discussed over cognac, demanded to know point-blank from Naumann, quote, whether these masses would be liquidated on the spot by Bundeswehr soldiers before they could storm the European paradise, unquote. Many Germans have real and deep fears that now that the USSR is gone, the whole post-war order has gone with it. With Germany once more reunified, they fear that all restraints on its certain ascent to superpower status have evaporated, and seeing the impotence of international institutions, believe that the long-term outcome will be a new war or some kind of military adventure to regain so-called lost territories as a result of stage-managed provocations. This view is shared to some degree in Poland, where the then Defense Minister Jan Parys, P-A-R-Y-S, expressed concern about German policy as early as February of 1992 at a meeting of his ministry's Defense Council. The Polish view was on more public display soon after for those who wanted to take notice in the form of a perhaps a deliberately leaked Polish intelligence report which warned that Germany cannot be trusted because, quote, its intentions are not known, unquote. We have been examining the continuity between the old and the new German military in the context of the recent deployment of Luftwaffe units in support of peacekeeping forces in the former Yugoslavia. What we're going to look at next is a segment of the reunited Germany, the New Danger, entitled Mixing It in Yugoslavia. And this examines the German role in precipitating the breakup of Yugoslavia and the current crisis there. And in light of the activities currently being pursued by German intelligence and also the German Foreign Office, a serious question needs to be asked as to what extent perhaps the current crisis in the current Yugoslavia, the rationale for the first German combat support mission outside of its borders since World War II is, that's the rationalization for using those German forces. In another close-up segment, Reunited Germany, the New Danger examines a former U.S. Undersecretary of State's analysis that Germany was responsible for the Yugoslav War. In this close-up segment entitled U.S. Slams Germany for Yugoslav War, we read the following. Former U.S. Secretary of State Lawrence Eagleburger has laid the blame for the civil war in the former Yugoslavia squarely on the shoulders of Germany. Speaking on American PBS TV in December of 1994, Eagleburger declared that Germany bears, quote, full responsibility, unquote, for the bloody conflict because of its, quote, insistence on recognizing Slovenia and Croatia at all costs, unquote, in 1991. As predicted by the UN, the U.S. State Department, and the European community, the German action led to a wildfire escalation of the conflict into Bosnia, he said. Eagleburger spoke as the Atlantic Alliance sank deeper into a state of crisis. A glimpse into the increasingly tense international atmosphere generated by reunified Germany's great power politics first came over a year ago, however, in the shape of a very sharp but scarcely reported high-level diplomatic exchange between the Clinton administration in the USA and the Kohl government. In mid-June, the story went out over the international press agencies. The current U.S. Secretary of State Warren Christopher had blamed Germany for starting the bloody conflict in the former Yugoslavia. Said Christopher to the USA's biggest-selling international daily, USA Today, quote, there were serious mistakes made in the whole process of recognition of the independence of the former Yugoslav states of Croatia and Slovenia, and the Germans bear a particular responsibility in persuading their colleagues and the European community. He added, quote, many serious students of the matter think the problems we face today stem from the recognition of Croatia and thereafter of Bosnia, unquote. As soon as Christopher's comments hit the streets, German Chancellor Kohl and his foreign minister Klaus Kinkel sent their ambassador in Washington to the State Department, quote, to put the record straight, unquote. Kohl also issued a statement through a spokesman that Christopher's, quote, reproaches were unjustified, unquote. And Kinkel was wheeled out to claim, turning the truth both upside down and inside out, that Germany did not act unilaterally in recognizing Croatia and Slovenia, but, quote, followed the European community, unquote, when in fact, on December 11, 1991, the then German Foreign Minister Hans-Dietrich Genscher announced Germany's recognition of the two breakaway republics without any consultation with Germany's EU partners. As reported in an article by Mark Fisher in the June 18, 1993 edition of the International Herald Tribune, quote, the German reaction to Mr. Christopher's comments both officially and in the press was quick and heated, unquote. The German government vociferously condemned the analysis by people like Christopher and Eagleburger that Germany was responsible for the breakup of Yugoslavia and consequently the current unpleasantness unfolding there, that unpleasantness being the rationalization for the, or being the reason for the first German combat support mission outside of its borders since World War II, hence the discussion of the analysis of the continuity between the old and the new German armed forces. In Radio Free America 36, as well as RFA 37, we dealt with the continuity between the old Ustaschi fascist collaborationist regime, a puppet regime of Nazi Germany in World War II, and the current government of, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia. In past broadcasts, we've dealt with ongoing connections between Nazi elements in Germany and Ustaschi elements in Croatia. And in Radio Free America shows 14 and 15, as well as RFA 36 and 37, we dealt with the perpetuation of the Ustaschi regime and Croatian fascist forces in the bosom of organizations like the former World Anti-Communist League, the BND, and U.S. intelligence as well. Of the German role in the breakup of Yugoslavia and the setting up of the, quote, independent, unquote, government of Croatia, and the continuity between the current Croatian government and the old Ustaschi regime, Reunited Germany, the New Danger, writes as follows. The German government policy which engineered Slovakia's breakaway from the former Yugoslav Federation and which then steamrolled the European Union, or EU, into giving the breakaway province recognition was followed in Croatia's case during a meeting of EU foreign ministers in The Hague in November of 1991. At that meeting, the then German foreign minister and ex-member of Adolf Hitler's Nazi Party, Hans-Dietrich Genscher, announced without any prior notice Germany's intention to recognize the regime of Franjo Tuđman in Croatia. This peremptory declaration, which stunned Germany's EU partners, set the seal on any last surviving chance of either preserving the Yugoslav state, which, even at that stage, the USA, France, and Britain believed could be achieved, or of preventing the eruption of the conflicts within Yugoslavia into full-scale war. The regime which Genscher was so keen to recognize has an unbroken line of continuity from the Ustaschi murderers of Ante Pavelić during the Second World War. The Croat government's complexion has escaped much attention because of international media attention on its rival gangsters and killers in Serbia. The fact is, however, that Franjo Tuđman is a hardline anti-Semite, proud that his wife, quote, is neither Jewish nor Serbian, unquote. Tuđman has links with the French fascist Front National leader Jean-Marie Le Pen in France. Let's see, beginning again. Tuđman has links with the French fascist Front National leader Jean-Marie Le Pen in France, has kept open house for Nazis from across Europe, including the infamous Nazi Black Legion mercenaries, and has himself written a book, Wastelands, Historical Truth, denying the Holocaust and defending Hitler. Such niceties mean little in Bonn, and the tactic that bulldozed the EU into following Germany's line with recognition of Tuđman on January 15, 1992, and drove the USA into reversing its former Yugoslav unity position, has since been ruthlessly applied in Bosnia-Herzegovina, which, though dubbed a, quote, artificial state, unquote, had actually symbolized the multinationality Yugoslav experiment. By the way, more on the Ustaschi can be found, and the fascist collaborationist government of wartime Croatia can be found in Radio Free America program number 17, available from archives on audio, the address for which I will give at the end of this segment. The next segment of Reunited Germany, the New Danger, deals with how German policy has altered U.S. policy towards the former Yugoslavia. In November of 1994, the U.S. again made a dramatic policy switch with the decision to withdraw from the international arms embargo and to take a firmer position in support of Bosnia, a decision which has led to speculation and fears about the collapse of NATO. At first sight, this move by the Clinton administration risks interpretation as a capitulation to German pressure for tougher military action against the Serb nationalist Milosevic and his barbaric regime, but, in fact, may be something else, a preemptive bid to forestall a longer-term German intervention. Which of the two is still not clear. What is crystal clear, on the other hand, is the central objective of revived German imperialism, the complete destruction of Yugoslavia to extend German influence and control over the entire Balkans region. Reluctant to intervene directly, the German government has preferred to use the EU, which it now dominates, as a Trojan horse to project its own interests. The right-wing conservative Welt am Sonntag spelled this out with brutal clarity more than 3 years ago when it wrote that the Serbs are, quote, conducting a campaign against Western civilization, unquote, and called for EU military intervention, without which the EU would be seen as a, quote, paper tiger, unquote. Since these words were written as an essential formulation of official policy, the German media has had little to add, except to make the near-daily diet of Serb atrocity stories ever more grotesque. For the German government and its largely supportive media, there is not even the pretense of being even-handed. Serbia is the enemy, full stop. Furthermore, there has been visible intervention by the EU, whose troops wear the blue helmets of the United Nations, but this involvement has done little to halt the slaughter which has already left as many as 500,000 refugees and 1.5 million people homeless, the price of Germany's green light to Croatia to start serious hostilities. In past broadcasts, including RFA 36, we've dealt with German arms shipments to Croatia, and we've dealt with German mercenaries. In past broadcasts, we've dealt with German Nazi mercenaries going to Croatia with a blind eye being turned by the German government. More on Germany's maneuvering of NATO and the EU in order to project its maneuvering vis-a-vis NATO and the EU as excuses to project its own military presence into the former Yugoslavia. And again, bear in mind Germany's pivotal role in precipitating that crisis. More about the German strategy vis-a-vis NATO and the EU and the former Yugoslavia in reunited Germany. Of course, the Kohl government never ceases to proclaim its loyalty to Cold War articles of faith like NATO, which was established primarily to keep Germany under control. However, behind these pleas, another, more disturbing picture is taking shape, highlighting the hidden issues involved in the Western Allied response and confusion over policy in former Yugoslavia. Now that the U.S. is largely out of the reckoning in Europe and the other wartime allies, Britain, France, and the former Soviet Union, have pulled out of Germany, German defense policy gives even greater emphasis to the Western European Union, or WEU, the military arm of the German-dominated EU, which is described in the Federal Defense Ministry's 1994 white paper as a, quote, partner, unquote, to NATO. In particular, in its public pronouncements, the German Defense Ministry heavily stresses the future importance of the 40,000-strong so-called European Corps, comprising troops from Germany, France, and Belgium, and with an alternating command based in Strasbourg, which will be operational from October 1st, 1995. The aims of this corps are supposedly to defend the Western Allies and to take part in peacekeeping and humanitarian actions. It is envisaged that the corps will finally come under the umbrella of the WEU, which is formerly the, quote, European pillar, unquote, of NATO. The German strategy behind these steps, however, borders on blackmail and was fulsomely laid out by Admiral Ulrich Weisser, W-E-I-S-S-E-R, chief of planning at the German Defense Ministry, quote, "Our partners in Europe have no alternative. Either they follow the path of European integration or strew the path with obstacles and force Germany to go its own way," unquote. Again, that from chief of planning at the German Defense Ministry. Continuing, "Now, though, that is in the balance, with some U.S. officials expressing serious misgivings that Europe will be locked into the German defense structure and not the other way round. They fear at the military level the prospect of being outmaneuvered, as happened at the political level over Yugoslavia, but do not know how to react and how to regain a measure of control over Germany. This partly explains the overtures from President Clinton in the summer of 1994 to the Bonn government to, quote, take a higher profile, unquote, in UN-NATO peacekeeping operations and to be more willing to join with its NATO partners in situations like the Gulf War. What the Allies' waltz around Bonn really means, however, was summed up in different circumstances by the colorful aphorism of the late U.S. President Lyndon Johnson. Better to have them inside the tent, and then I'm going to paraphrase, micturating out than outside and micturating in," unquote. Until his death in August of 1994, NATO General Secretary Manfred Werner quietly pushed the new European-centered concepts emanating from Bonn. He was such a firm believer in the idea of a European army that in 1974, he even addressed the concept's first incarnation, veterans of the Waffen-SS, at a meeting in Stuttgart to discuss long-term German security. Underlying that discussion was the understanding that to be a key player on the world stage again, Germany had to break free, in slow stages, of all its restrictions and had to get rid of constitutional curbs on deployment of its armed forces. Those curbs are by degrees gradually being removed, and the transformation being undertaken by Klaus Naumann of the Bundeswehr into an army of aggression, as even some German military officials have noted, is well underway.
returning for the last time this segment to the reunited Germany, the new danger, they go on to say, in July of 1994, 20 years later, that's 20 years after the address of Manfred Werner to veterans of the Waffen-SS, the HIAG, in July of 1994, 20 years later, the latter step was taken when, backed by 142 pages of tortuous legal argumentation, the Constitutional Court in Karlsruhe had decided that German troops could be dispatched beyond NATO's frontiers and, subject to parliamentary approval, could take part in multinational operations. Behind all the official proposals and counterproposals on the future of Europe is a deep and unspoken fear of regenerated German militarism and dominance. As international affairs specialist James Rollo, R-O-L-L-O, from the Institute of Strategic Studies in London has explained, quote, what we see, some among us with a shudder, is Germany taking the helm in Europe, unquote. And in other segments available from archives on audio, the possibility that the shooting down of a U.S. plane may not have been the oversight that it was, and more concerning the possibilities of German covert operation in order to create the crises that will necessitate the transformation of the German military into what it used to be and into the institution that it has maintained continuity with, namely the old German military. I've made references during the course of this broadcast to other broadcasts containing material that is supplemental to what I'm discussing in this particular series. All of those archive shows are on permanent file with a tape duplication service. The address, etc., for that tape duplication service follows.
Tape cassettes of Dave Emery's archive documentaries and weekly One Step Beyond programs are available from a tape duplication service. The service is archives on audio, and you can contact them at Post Office Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. Once again, that's P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number and area code are 415-346-1840. A 12-page catalog listing and describing each archive show is available.
That, by the way, is now a 19-page catalog. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.